Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro. Today we're going to be playing some of our favorite conversations from the spring of 2025. First, we start the show with a featured conversation with beloved Catholic apologetics author and philosopher Peter Kreeft. I'm sure you've read some of his writings, so you don't want to miss that conversation. Peter Kreeft, first up. After that, we'll reconnect with singer-songwriters and married couple Blake and Megan Flynn. In our second half hour, we're going to learn all about the church's best-kept secret, the consecrated virginity. And at the end of the program, we reconnect with singer-songwriter from the Novum Collective, Will Hickle. So, lots coming up. We begin now with Peter Kreeft. I'm sure that many of you have heard of Peter Kreeft. As you have looked up books and authors to help you deepen your Catholic faith, you probably came across one of his over 100 books. Perhaps you've heard Peter Kreeft. Maybe you had him as a professor at Boston College, or maybe you heard my conversations with him in 2017 and 2013 on this program. But perhaps you didn't know that he is a convert. Peter Kreeft has just published his autobiography titled From Calvinist to Catholic, in which he tells his own story and shares some of the ideas that brought him to the Catholic Church. To find out more, earlier this week, I had a chance to speak with Peter Kreeft. Dr. Kreeft, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I have to say, you might not remember, but you and I spoke in 2017 about your book, Catholics and Protestants, and we had previously spoken in 2013 about Jacob's Ladder. Mm-hmm. I can't believe that was so long ago. And it made me think that in Jacob's Ladder, which is a book that I love, by the way, you spoke about the steps, I believe it was 10 steps to truth. And it made me wonder if some of those steps were the same steps that maybe brought you or started maybe bringing you into the Catholic Church.
Yes, in two ways. The steps were logical and the steps were mainly historical. That is, historical facts.
Yeah, tell us more.
Well, the scientific method is not limited to science. It comes from common sense and it is applicable to many things, including many aspects of religion. So when I discovered that it is a historical fact that Christ established a visible single church with apostolic authority and traced its record through history, I concluded that the Catholic Church was the church that Christ established and not the Reformed Church or the Calvinist Church or any of the other breakoffs.
Right. Would you say that that journey began before you even knew that you were being drawn into the Catholic Church?
No, the being drawn began before the conscious journey. I think my first Catholic thought was about the age of 8 when I first visited St. Patrick's Cathedral and said, "This is amazing beauty. This is heavenly beauty."
Oh, wow.
And I asked my father, how can, this is a wrong church, isn't it? Oh, yes, it's a terrible church. It's the Whore of Babylon. And I said, "Well, how can it be so beautiful?"
Yeah.
And he had no answer. And then later I read in a totally uncomprehending way, some of the mystics, especially St. John of the Cross. And I said, "This is magnificent. I don't fully understand it, but this is not trash. This is like Mount Everest."
I find that so interesting. And I would think that you're a man of reason. You like logic. You're a philosopher, but it's amazing that it was the beauty that was maybe the first place where that journey began.
Beauty. I think Bishop Robert Barron likes to say this: beauty is the point of the arrow of both goodness and truth. It hits us in the heart, and we don't throw up defenses to it. We can throw up rationalizing to arguments, and we can throw up moralizing or the desire to escape from moralizing to commandments, but we can throw up nothing against beauty.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
It's like water. It comes under the castle walls and invades, even though the drawbridge is down.
Yeah. And I'm also intrigued by the fact that you said that when you started consciously looking into the Catholic Church, that it was the history and not so much, again, those philosophical ideas, because I presume, I mean, you're a Can I say that you're a lover of Socrates and
Yes.
that some of those Socratic ideas or methods were also influencing you or bringing you closer to the Catholic Church?
Oh, yes, but they were not distinctive. A lot of good Protestants are also very good philosophers and lovers of Socrates and so on. But historical facts are not like arguments. They're same. An argument always has an alternative. A fact doesn't have an alternative. It happened.
Yeah. I think that I can also say that you were clearly very influenced by C.S. Lewis and maybe
Yes.
Tolkien. What were some of their writings or ideas that also kind of moved you closer to this side of the Tiber?
When my college roommate was losing his faith, someone suggested that he read Bertrand Russell's Why I Am Not a Christian. He did, and he said, I think I got my faith back from that book. It's so silly. But now I want a book on the other side. And someone recommended Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And he said, that gave me my faith back. It made it so clear and so reasonable that it was unanswerable. And both Protestants and Catholics love Mere Christianity. It has probably done more for ecumenism than any other book in modern times.
So you'd think, or someone would think that that is a book that is making a case for Christianity, but you're saying that for you, it also made a case for Catholicism.
Because the Catholic version of Christianity is, though implicitly rather than explicitly, Lewis thought of himself as a Protestant, there massively. For instance, the sacraments are real. They work. They're not just symbols. Strongly believed in the real presence. He believed clearly in purgatory. He believed in respect for the saints. He believed in confession. And he believed that salvation is not simply a legal issue, as Luther thought, but an ontological issue. We get a new nature. Something really happens in us, almost like a transubstantiation of the soul. Those are all Catholic ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say? I was quite moved by one of your last chapters in the book about when you broke the news to your parents. What kind of advice would you give to someone who is maybe being courted by the Catholic Church and as they go through that journey? Obviously, some of the ideas you've already shared, but in terms of sort of the more human, practical, emotional advice, what?
Anyone who is a one-sided, absent-minded professor like myself, strong in reason and weak in human feelings, intuitions, social adeptness, etc., pay attention to the other half of your brain. Pay attention to what the other side is feeling rather than thinking, and realize that arguments are not nearly as strong as we think we are, and they are. It devastated my parents. They were totally shocked. And it took years for that shock to wear away and respect to return. And that was not necessary. That was my stupid mistake. I should have prepared them for it gradually. I eventually did and let them into my journey and had a lot of conversations, which were difficult but worthwhile, such that we finally came to respect each other and know that we were worshiping the same God and trying to follow the same Christ, even though we had immense differences. But that took a long while and a lot of suffering.
I think that if I remember correctly from when you wrote Catholics and Protestants, you would not think, or would you think that you wish your parents would have also converted to Catholicism?
Yes, but I had no thought that they would. Their faith was firmly anchored in not just the theology, but the piety and the life of good evangelical Protestants. Frankly, they knew Jesus Christ more securely than most Catholics I know did. And when Catholics come to do that, then Protestants will come home. They will recognize the thing that they're searching for.
Absolutely. I can't let you go without asking you about surfing. Is that okay? Can we talk about surfing?
Of course, of course.
Because you don't strike to me as the surfer dude.
I'm a surfer, but not a dude. I'm a cheater because I use a boogie board. I have a balance problem, but you can do almost anything on a boogie board that you can do on a regular surfboard. And I'm not a very good surfer, but it's fun. It's not only fun, it's kind of mystical because the ocean is the biggest thing we ever touch, and its power is immense. So it's a natural symbol for God, and it comes in waves like divine providence and divine grace. And some of those waves are wipeouts, and some of them are missed, and some of them are ridden with bliss. So when you become one with the wave, that's like becoming one with the will of God. So I think that's a good physical symbol for sanctity and what we're doing in heaven forever.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I'm not a surfer myself. I've never tried it, but maybe you've planted the seed in my heart to take up surfing. Maybe lastly, Dr. Kreeft, we have a new Pope, Pope Leo the 14th. What are your thoughts?
Praise the Lord. The Holy Spirit knows what he's doing. Leo is a wonderful
Amen.
name. He knows the task that is in front of him, a very difficult task of uniting the church, and he will do it. He is doing it. Bravo.
Bravo indeed. Thank you so much for these words and for telling us a little bit about your life. I'm kind of glad we didn't talk more because I want people to go get the book From Calvinist to Catholic, and then they can find out all those wonderful stories about your growing up and coming into the Catholic Church. Dr. Peter Kreeft, thank you so much for sharing with us a little bit about your life today.
And thank you for letting me do that. God bless you and your work.
Thank you, you too. Dr. Peter Kreeft is a professor of philosophy at Boston College. He is the author of over 100 books. His latest, From Calvinist to Catholic, is published by Ignatius. Here now is Flynn with And from their new album, Feel Something. That was Flynn with And from their new album, Feel Something. We met Blake and Megan Flynn in 2022 when they had just gotten married, and they had been releasing several singles and had over 100,000 streams on Spotify. Their music is a unique blend of, I don't even know what. It's hard to pinpoint, but it's good, with clever, catchy, and memorable lyrics and a great sound. It's no surprise that they are so successful. Blake and Megan now have two children, and they have just released a full album titled Feel Something. And so, to tell us more, I am now joined by Blake and Megan Flynn and their children, apparently. How are you guys? Welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour.
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Congratulations on baby number two, right?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, but the one that we're hearing is your oldest.
Yes, he's our oldest, and we just had a daughter in May.
Okay, congratulations on that. So, because I was going to start out by asking what's new, but I guess that's new.
Yep, that's what we've been up to.
But you still managed to put out an album.
Yes, it's been over the course of a long period of time, but we, yeah, just finished up the album this year, about a month ago, and the whole thing is out now. It's 12 songs long, but it has been quite the process.
Yeah, I can imagine, and we're going to talk about that for a second, but so last time we spoke, which was, I don't know when that was, 2022 or something, you had just gotten married, and you guys were telling me how you co-write. So everything you do is your co-writing. Is that still the same dynamic here? Still married, still co-writing?
It's definitely still married, still co-writing, I would say. This album, I feel like, was a lot more of like taking turns writing. Like Blake would write one and I would write one. Do you agree?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think there are multiple songs where we definitely still co-wrote, but then a couple different songs where I'd write a whole song and then she would do the same. So,
okay. That's interesting because I mean, I haven't heard the whole album, but the tracks I've heard, they like, you guys have very similar styles. Like, yeah. I can't tell who wrote what.
Yeah.
And in terms of, I guess, production, like, are you thinking, cause I still can't really quite pinpoint your musical style. I'm still trying to, is it like there's a blend of something there, but I'm not quite sure what it is. How would you describe your musical style?
Yeah, I think we would describe it as we've been compared to we're the Catholic chain smokers. That's what we have heard from different people, which is they're a big pop electronic group.
Okay.
And yeah, we're kind of an indie pop, electronic musical style, I guess.
I feel like it changes a lot too. Like our songs, certain songs are a certain style. And I think it's because we kind of just make what we feel like. And sometimes it doesn't always like fit in together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's probably why I can't quite pinpoint it. I don't know if I would go with electronic, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can hear that in there. So this new album, Feel Something, that's the title of the album. Where I'm always intrigued about album titles and where that comes from. And all I can think is like, Megan, like you were pregnant for like 9 months while you guys were writing. And now you have a second child. And like, does the Feel Something have anything to do with that kind of stage of your lives?
Actually, no, which is crazy. But we wrote a lot of this album back in 2022.
Oh, 2019 to 2022. Okay. It was really a long
period.
Yeah, we recorded it in 2022, I think. So I wasn't even pregnant yet.
No.
And with our first child either. I feel like it was more so like relationship based. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I think a lot of our songs revolve around relationships, whether they're happy or maybe struggling, and that's kind of where we pull our inspiration from. It's mostly from the people around us and, you know, watching people in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we write pretty sad relationship songs, you know.
Yeah. We're in like a happy marriage.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we've been together for coming up on like 8 years, I think. Time. And so we write a lot of breakup songs, but we're doing, sometimes people check on us like, are you guys okay? These songs are really sad. And that's just kind of what comes out, I guess. But
No, that's good. I actually, I would have said that they're relationship songs, that seems to be a lot of your very, very common, even from before when you were writing singles or putting out singles. But yeah, themes like, you know, you, what is it that you being with you makes me messed up or you make me messed up? That could not necessarily be a good thing.
Right.
If we're messed up in the right context, I suppose it could be like, you make me messed up in a good way, I guess.
Right.
So tell me about the title. Why Feel Something?
Well, I feel like a lot of the songs, it's interesting because we were, you know, we're 26 now. And when we started writing some of these songs, like we were like 20 years old, almost some of them, you know, so like our lives have just changed so much. But I feel like Feel Something kind of came out of like a lot of our songs are about maybe the things that a lot of people feel inside, but you're kind of scared to say out loud, like you're, or you don't want to admit, or I don't know. I just found a lot of the things we wrote up, like are things that maybe I wouldn't tell anybody that I was feeling, and just kind of hold them inside. And then instead of that, like just kind of owning the idea of letting things out and talking to someone and sharing feelings and just like, it's okay to feel something. And I think, I don't know, at least like how I grew up, I feel like a lot of the people around me and me myself also felt like I couldn't really fully, and I know you felt that way too at times, like just not being able, not allowed to feel certain things. But I don't know, as an adult, I just feel like I look and I think, you can't really help how you feel about situations. So like, you might as well lean into it.
And that's really interesting, because I think a lot of times we make ourselves not, maybe we feel something, but we might not express it out loud for whatever reason. So are you saying that you're trying to encourage your listeners, people who listen to the music, to actually recognize some of those same feelings or experiences in their own lives so that they can own them or share them?
I would say absolutely. Yeah. Like just wanting people to feel comfortable talking about things. We're both very empathetic people. So we love talking about like feelings and deep thoughts rather than like surface level things. So,
right.
And I feel like we end up having a lot of deep conversations with people about like feelings and stuff and trying to like validate and just say, you know, what you're going through is hard and we totally, you know, we're here for you. And yeah, I feel like it's kind of just a little letter to our listeners of like, you're seen and your feelings are like fair and like we feel them too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so good. And I think music is a great avenue for that kind of experience. So all these songs you guys have been writing, like you were writing songs, 12 songs is a lot of songs. Can I just say that?
Yeah.
So are you still writing? Are you constant, or have things slowed down with two children? Are you thinking of continue putting out more singles or working on a new album? What's next?
Yeah, things have slowed down just as, you know, the priority has shifted a little bit, but we're definitely still writing and finding time to do that. And, you know, we have about 6 or 7 songs that are pretty close to being ready to, you know, come out as singles. They just need some work here and there, and we definitely plan on recording more and putting those singles out.
Well, I look forward to that, to more relationship songs and not so many breakup songs as you guys.
We are trying to shift our focus to be a little bit more happy.
Yeah.
A little more happy, maybe, you know, maybe some children, some diaper changing songs. How's that?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Some parenting, maybe.
silly songs for the kids. Megan, Blake, it's so good to reconnect with you guys. I'm so happy to hear your music because, again, it's such great music, even though we can't really quite pinpoint it. Maybe that's why it's so good. Congratulations again on the young family. And I hope to stay in touch and that you guys can come back on the show soon.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us. And it was good to see you.
Yes. God bless. You can find Flynn on your social media and listen to their music on all streaming platforms. Their new album, Feel Something, is published by Novum Records. If you missed any part of this interview or you want to listen to it again, head on over to slmedia.org/podcast. All our programs are archived there. Here now, to take us out, is Flynn with Messed Up from their new album, Feel Something.
I've been chasing all the thoughts in my head, but I'm stuck cause they're racing, levitating. You got my mind messed up. I've been waiting for the day that you say that you got a replacement. You're impatient. You got my mind messed up. You're spending too much time and I'm trying to drown the memories. Can't sleep, I'm terrified and I can't seem to find the remedy. Was a fool, now I know how these things really go. You're a stranger in my ear. You're spending too much time and I'm trying to drown the memories, memories. Wasn't thinking, I forgot who I was in this long conversation, hesitating. You got my mind messed up. You're spending too much time and I'm trying to drown the memories. Can't sleep, I'm terrified and I can't seem to find the remedy. Was a fool, now I know how these things really go. You're a stranger in my ear. Spending too much time and I'm trying to drown the memories, memories.
We're listening to Flynn with Messed Up from their album Feel Something. This is a special edition of the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro. Subscribe to our podcast and never miss an episode. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro. Consecrated virginity is the oldest form of consecrated life, but it is probably the least known religious vocation. What is it? In short, consecrated virgins do not belong to a religious congregation, but they make promises of chastity to their local bishop, and they live single lives in the world. If you're wondering why you've never heard of the consecrated virginity, perhaps it's because there aren't a lot of them, and also because there's very little information available. Until now. Espoused to Christ, A Theology of Consecrated Virginity by Aaron Kinsella is an invaluable resource for anyone wanting to understand this beautiful and ancient vocation, especially for women who may be discerning. So to tell us more, I'm now joined by Aaron Kinsella. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour, finally.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here with you.
Yes. Okay, so you just heard my interpretation of a consecrated virgin. How would you define a consecrated virgin to someone who's never heard of that?
I know, it's such a hard thing because often you're comparing consecrated virginity to like other forms of consecrated life, whatever. But I would say a consecrated virgin is someone who receives a consecration at the hands of her bishop, okay, which means that by that consecration, she becomes a bride of Christ. And she is so in the context of her diocesan church. So she has a tie to the diocesan church. And by her life, she lays it down in prayer, penance, and service for the good of the people of God, particularly in her diocese. Okay, so that's a big, long definition.
No, that's good. And I wasn't that far off. So would you say that the main distinction, and I hate to do this because you just told me not to do it, but to compare with other forms of consecrated life. So a religious sister who belongs to a religious community, mm-hmm. can we say that you're like a religious sister, but you don't belong to a religious community?
Yeah, it's like kind of like that, exactly. Like the identity of being a bride of Christ and of like being a spouse to Christ, that's kind of fundamental to it. And then where sisters would live in religious community, you know, all together in a community, mm-hmm. and they're kind of tied to the actual community, which might be in many dioceses across the world. The consecrated virgin really is tied to her diocesan bishop, to her diocese. And so consecrated virgins usually either live alone or with families. We don't wear habits. No. The only thing we have is our lovely ring, yes. which signifies our marriage to Jesus.
A little ring like a pope.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, quite a smaller ring. Yeah. Yes. A little bit smaller, you know.
So you still take vows, poverty.
So we don't actually. This promises. Is the other like okay. major distinction. So we don't even make anything. We don't make really? Vows of poverty. Yeah, I
Wait,
know, right?
I was at your.
I know.
I was there. I thought you made promises. Or I something. Know.
So what we actually do is before we receive the consecration at the hands of the diocesan bishop, uh-huh. he'll ask us some questions. So like, you know, are you resolved to be faithful to Christ, that your witness may be a sign of, you know, faithfulness mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. of the gospel of Christ, something like that. And then we make a propositum. So I would say like, I, Aaron Kinsella, resolve to persevere in perfect chastity all the days of my life. So we make that resolution to be okay. in this celibate vocation, to persevere in chastity in perfect continence for the rest of our life. And then we receive the consecration at the hands of the bishop. So it's like a one and done thing. Once we've promised it, what's called the sanctum propositum, then he confers the consecration.
Okay, interesting. Because mm-hmm. I thought that that's what kind of defined consecrated life, that you take those three vows.
Yeah, and usually it would. And I mean, we can think of some like differences in terms of poverty because some,
yeah, of course.
Like, you know, religious priests or things like that can't
yes,
do.
Yes.
And I can't take a vow of poverty because consecrated virgins are required yes, to provide for to their own. Yeah, yeah exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, all and, of those and kind I think, of things, yeah. I mean, diocesan priests don't take vows either. They make yep. the promises. And I don't think poverty is one of those promises. You're right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So yep. then when you are discerning, you yep. as a young searching Ish. Woman, discerning, and you're feeling a tug to religious life or consecrated, mm. you know, like how mm. did you, like, what was that process like for you? How did you know that this is a very specific call? Like, were you mm-hmm. looking at other religious congregations or?
Yeah, I actually, I felt a call to kind of belong totally to the Lord shortly after my reversion to the faith, okay. which happened in my early 20s.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, what's the most radical thing I can do in my life? Obviously, become a sister. Like yeah, that's, yeah, you know. Yeah. So I discerned, grew a little bit deeper in my faith. And then I did join a religious order in here in Ottawa for mm-hmm. about a year and a half.
Okay.
And for me, it was like the whole kind of process of coming to this vocation was a long one that was filled with lots of joy and also lots of pain partly because the vocation of religious life wasn't actually where the Lord was calling me. And it's always painful to leave a, you know, a religious order when you've been there mm-hmm. for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then partly because I felt like the Lord was calling me to be his and I was trying to give myself to him and he was shutting all of these doors. Like I would go to a come and see at this religious order mm-hmm. or this one. And I was like, Lord, I don't know what you want from me. Like, what do you want? So it ended up being that I went to speak with Cardinal Collins and I was telling him a little bit about my experience. Yeah, and he said, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he said, oh, it sounds like consecrated virginity. And I was like, okay. So, and I had heard about it. Like I knew about it because I had gone to a consecration a few years earlier. And I remember specifically at that consecration thinking, thank you, Lord, that you're not calling me to this vocation as one does, yeah. because it seems like the worst vocation in the world. You have no husband to squash bugs, no religious yeah. order to look after you when you get old. Yeah. Like this is, anyway. So, but when okay. Cardinal Collins said that, I kind of like the Lord had brought me to a place in my heart where I was actually open to looking at it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like learning more about the vocation. I was like, oh yeah, Lord, this is it. This is exactly how you're calling mm-hmm. me to belong to you. This is it. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then why would you say, and I know that you've written the book and it's like the first ever book that anybody has written about this. So like, why is this such a, like, this is the best kept secret of the church or the worst kept secret? I mean, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's
Nobody
right.
knows about this.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting to see, like, as the years go on, even year by year, more people are finding out mm-hmm. about it, which is really beautiful. But I think partly there's a little bit of a not necessarily a lack of desire to know about it, but I think in some ways it's difficult for, particularly for bishops, because they're the ones who regulate this vocation, who are responsible for formation, for mm-hmm. consecrating women, all of those kind of things. They have so much on their plates mm-hmm. that I think it has been difficult for a number of bishops to be like, okay, so what are we supposed to do with these women, or how can we intentionally foster this mm-hmm. vocation? Or mm-hmm. there are many vocations directors who don't really know about the vocation. And then if you go past that to the people in the pews, a lot of how we conceive about consecrated life is very specific to religious life. So like, if we have petitions at Mass, we yeah. pray for more vocations to priesthood and religious life. Yeah. And then there's a whole category of people that are left out of mm-hmm. of that. You know, just that one word, yeah. consecrated, could can kind of expand people's understanding about this vocation.
Yeah.
So there's like these little things, you know, it's like a cultural thing, I think, in the church of kind of reclaiming this vocation that is the oldest form of consecrated life.
I was
going to
say, because it's not a new thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. yeah. It was the first form of consecrated life in the church right from the beginning.
Yeah.
And then with kind of the growth up of religious orders, then the consecration of virgins went down. And so it's just since 1970 that it's been possible again.
Yeah. Now that since you've just made me think this might be a whole other can of worms that we probably don't have time to talk about right now, but you did all the research so you could write the book. Mm. And obviously for your own life experience as well.
Yeah.
Could there be men that consecrate themselves as virgins to their bishops?
Excellent question. So that it actually is not possible in terms of consecrated virginity. And part of the reason is because in the early church, the women who did this were talked about by the fathers as brides of Christ. Uh-huh. So how the church saw them is as like living witnesses or icons of the church herself, mm-hmm. right? So being a spouse or a bride of Christ, the bridegroom, we can see in the same way as, you know, priesthood, right?
Yeah.
Why men are priests, part of it is because there is this complementarity yeah. and this bridal, bride-bridegroom yeah. imagery. Same thing for consecrated virginity. So me as a bride of Christ, I image the church, and that relationship that I have with Christ yeah, is an image of the relationship of Christ and the church. But there are many young people actually who are feeling called to either, you know, remain single or not mm-hmm. enter into some form of consecrated life or something. And I think the church, there's something happening in the church right now for those young people, many of whom might be men who are feeling called to, you know, to give themselves fully to the Lord in some way.
Okay, wow. This is mm-hmm. this is wonderful. So much more there, but that's why somebody wrote a book. and I understand that there's also a website that people yes. can go to, espoused to Christ.com.
That's right.
And so if anybody that's listening is intrigued by this, or maybe this is mm-hmm. the answer to that tug that you've been feeling inside of you, go to espoused to Christ.com, and maybe they can even reach out to you, Erin.
Yep, there's a web form there. Yeah, I'd love to chat with people anytime.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it, because there aren't that many. There are more than there were when I started working for the church, but there aren't that many. But probably most archdioceses will have one or two, right?
You think most of them will. Yep, a lot of them will. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Aaron. Thank you for saying yes to that call. And thank you to Cardinal Collins for pointing you in the right way. And thank you for writing the book. And I hope that this is good. I trust that this is going to be very useful for a lot of our listeners.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to be with you.
Yes. Aaron Kinsella is a consecrated virgin in the Archdiocese of Ottawa, Cornwall. Her book, Espoused to Christ, is published by Sophia Press. You can find out more and get the book at espousedtochrist.com. Here now is the Novum Collective with Behold Him, featuring Julia Lopez from their album Live in Louisville. Listening to Julia Lopez with Behold Him from the Novum Collective album Live in Louisville. We first heard of the Novum Collective from Rita West, who was first featured on this program in 2018. Then in 2021, we met the man behind Novum, Will Hickel. Will Hickel is part of a duo, Novum, which he shares with Eric Wilkes. And that collaboration led to a larger collaboration of artists called the Novum Collective. Several artists in that collective have been featured on this program over the years. Stephen Jobert, Kate Curran, Flynn, and of course, Rita West. And we've been listening to their latest album, Live in Louisville. And to tell us more, I'm now joined by Will Hickel. Will, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. Thanks for having me again.
Okay, so I always feel like I kind of jumble up the whole Novum Collective, Novum, although I did pretty good today. But can you explain for our listeners kind of what the collective is and how it came to be?
Yeah, so I own a small Catholic record label called Novum Records, mm-hmm. which started because I started a band called Novum. And just naturally, God kept calling us to work with more and more artists. So we were like, you know what, let's just form this into a label. So you have Novum Records. And then the okay. sister company to that is Novum Publishing. So we do both like sheet music publishing and then okay. of course recording. And the original band Novum, we wanted to pivot from worship to alt rock because that's what we were into.
Okay.
But we still wanted a way to record worship. So we said, you know what, why don't we just create Novum Collective so that we can still record worship and then invite other Novum Records artists to do it with us and just kind of expand that mission. And so that's kind of the genesis, but now it's kind of taken its own life. There's a new leadership team who's okay. doing planning more records and more live events and stuff. So it's becoming an outreach now.
Okay. So you have the recording, so Novum Records,
mm-hmm.
and then is the collective artists that are being published by the record label? Is that how it works? Or how does an artist join the collective?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. So the collective is made of the artists who make their way into the label. So I guess the pipeline would be like you come into, you either join Novum Publishing as a songwriter. So we'll sign people just as songwriters.
Okay.
And then we'll also sign recording artists who want to actually make records. And those two kind of cohorts of people are eligible to be part of Novum Collective. But we are, we're all open to outside collaboration, right?
Like okay.
if another organization wants to work with us or other artists, we've certainly done that in the past. So yeah. But in terms of like, I guess, traveling with us, doing events with us, like that's going to be people that are committed
well.
Committed to Novum. But in terms of like, if we want to make a record or something with another artist.
Is the priority the writing of the music, like collaborating on songwriting? Like for example, this album that we've been listening to live in Louisville, there's artists that are there that they all collaborate on those songs and then perform them. Or mm-hmm. is the priority also to, like you said, to travel and do events together?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so that record was kind of our first, like, hey, we really just have this goal of okay. making a live recording with audio and video so you okay. can watch on the YouTube.
Yeah.
And so from that, we were inspired to continue the writing process. We're in 2025 now. So we've already recorded a new single, both in English and Spanish, that'll come out in April.
Okay.
But we have another live adoration album that we'll be recording in May, and then a live bilingual album that we'll be recording in August. So it's kind of both and. Like we're prioritizing making more records, but those are all going to be live records. So we're trying to also make it an outreach of like, hey, community that we're in, come pray with us, come be a part of this. And even we're starting to do an outreach where we're like, hey, if you're a songwriter and you've got voice memos and you know, ooh. You don't have anywhere to put them, like send them to us. We'd love to collaborate on songwriting for these projects and kind of involve more people in that way. So it's kind of, I guess, both and like live records, but also kind of trying to bring in more people to the mission.
Mm-hmm. And then do you get together to have writing sessions? Is there like a yearly or
yeah.
times where the collective comes together to write?
Yes. Yeah. Every year we have a retreat together. Mm-hmm. So that retreat is more reserved for like our committed Novum artists.
Okay.
But we are, again, as part of this new outreach mission, I know that it's on our roadmap to have open retreats, open to anybody to come collaborate with us, write with us, see what we're about.
Okay, nice. And you mentioned that there's a leadership team. So are they, like, you said that you've already are planning an adoration album,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of funny because I thought this was an adoration album, but yeah, I think you're calling it a worship album live in Louisville. Intentional that you're thinking, okay, let's do an adoration album. Let's get everybody together to write some adoration songs. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So for this one, and again, if anyone's listening to this and they have music that they think would be fitting for adoration, please, you know, send it our way. Our Instagram is at Novum Collective, and you can DM the guys over there to send your voice memos. But the live in Louisville, yeah, there are some songs, like especially a song like Behold Him is very like exposition
beautiful.
Heavy, like
beautiful.
Behold Him, he's coming towards us.
Yeah.
We praise him. I'll praise him. But this record is actually, when I say adoration album, I mean like we're going to have the monstrance, the Eucharist
like
out.
Tantum Ergo and.
We're going to have actual adoration happening. In terms of, it's going to be video, but it's not going to be an intense like stimulating video. It's going to be one camera shot with a spotlight on Jesus, and you can barely see the band. So, and it's going to be more acoustic. Like, live in Louisville is a bit bigger production, but this is going to be just a piano, a guitar, and vocalists, and songs that are purposely written for I'm in his presence and we're worshiping him, we're giving him worship. Right.
Okay, I look forward to that. Now, you mentioned the public, so Novum Publishing. So that's, so you're publishing like the sheet music? Because like songs like Behold Him, I'm thinking like I'd love to be able to play that at church.
Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah, no, so we have a great relationship with CCLI. So for anyone who works at parishes or churches, you know, you know what that is, Song Select. So if, in fact, Behold Him, if you go to Song Select and you look at the adoration, they have a, like an adoration set list kind of suggestions, and Behold Him is on there. And so, and you go to liturgy page, you'll see Novum Publishing is listed as a trusted publisher. So we have a great relationship with them. We actually, this new single that we did in English and Spanish called Back to Your Heart, that's releasing in April, and then the Spanish in June. The team that wrote that song actually flew out to their headquarters in February and recorded a bilingual version of that live. So, so in terms of our publishing arm, we do sell sheet music on our website, novumrecords.com/publishing or novumpublishing.org. So we do have that available and we make that, but also like for anyone who is using those modern tools like Song Select and, you know, baking that in with Pro Presenter or Planning Center, you can find our whole catalog there and yeah.
That's good to know. Now, I won't let you go before you tell me about this new Feo app.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yes. So so because I've been working in the music industry for a while and kind of seeing the pain points of existing as a Catholic musician and not a superstar, like a pop star who gets all the attention on Spotify and Apple, I said, you know what, guys, why don't we just build our own Spotify? And so that's what Feo is. Feo is a Catholic alternative to Spotify right now. On iOS, you can stream music and podcasts, and if you have Android, sadly just podcasts for now. And eventually we'll have a web application so you can like log in on your browser at work or whatever. But it is a native player. It's its own streaming platform. We will be paying musicians streaming royalties. We want to compete with Spotify, but we also want to offer Catholics, you know, a place where they can find things that are made by people who love the Eucharist. And it's not just worship or formation. It's like, go find a podcast on sports, go listen to rock music or pop music made by Catholics.
I see. So it's not just, so you said iOS, the full, it's all there, music and podcast. Android, I don't know if you mentioned, but an Android right now, you're still not, there's not
just
music yet,
podcasts,
but we're not yet. That's okay. Podcasts like the Salt and Light Hour.
It's on there. It's on there.
Very important podcast. The only one that people need to listen to. So that's Feo, F-I-O, and people can find out also on your website, novumrecords.com or Feo.
Streamfeo.com.
Streamfeo.com or look for F-I-O, Feo app on your app store.
Yeah.
Thank you. This is a lot of really good information, a lot of websites there, but don't get all confused because I think people just need to go to novumrecords.com and everything will be kind of,
you'll find it all.
Able to find it all there. Will, thank you so much for all you do. You're a busy guy. Very excited about the Feo app, and I love the music. I can't wait for this new Adoration album to come out, and so we can feature it on the show and talk more about it.
Yeah, well, thanks for your support. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, and God bless.
God bless.
You can learn all about all the Novum projects at one simple website, novumrecords.com. And that's also where you can find out about the Feo, F-I-O app. And you can look for the Novum Collective on all your streaming platforms. Here now to take us out is Eric Wilkes with Draw Us In from the Novum Collective album, Live in Louisville.
Through him all things were made for our salvation. Our sake crucified, our heart's garden meditation, adored and glorified, with the hope of resurrection, the hope that's everlasting, the hope that's everlasting. Won't you come? Lord, to one another, draw.
it's everlasting. I hope it's everlasting. Won't you come and make us one? Trust in, trust closer to you, Lord, to one another.
We're listening to Eric Wilkes of the Novum Collective with Draw Us In from their album Live in Louisville. And that concludes this special summer edition of the Salt and Light Hour. Remember to visit our website, slmedia.org, in order to find out everything you want about us and about how to support our ministry. We can't bring you this program for free without your support. Thank you for your donations. You can also subscribe to the Salt and Light Hour wherever you get your podcasts, and also listen to us on your Amazon Echo, Alexa, or Google device. Thank you for listening. I'm Deacon Bedro.